of the gospel I preach to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved if you hold firmly to the word I preach to you. Otherwise, you have believed in vain. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, he appeared to me as one abnormally formed. Today I want to talk about three things on this Easter Sunday morning. I want to talk about the reality of the resurrection, and then I want to talk about the relevance of the resurrection, and finally, I want to talk about the response to the resurrection. Let me begin first with the reality of the resurrection. The year was 1778, and a man named Simon Greenlee, what a name, a man named Simon Greenlee was born. He was the grandson of a pastor and the child of practicing Christians, but he grew to life a practicing atheist or agnostic. He had no time for Christ. He rejected the faith of his parents. He rejected the faith of his grandparents. And he found Christianity to be utterly irrelevant. He gave his life to studying. Today, every one of you are impacted by Simon Greenlee in a multitude of ways. But the first being this, if you ever have to go to court, you will interact with Simon Greenlee, because Simon Greenlee was the man who established the rules of evidence that are used to this very day in the American court system. He's the one that said hearsay is irrelevant. He's the one that said that I just can't come in and say somebody told me this and be a witness. He said, no, that's not good evidence. Simon Greenlee. Did that. In fact, he wrote three volumes of the History of Evidentiary Proof that became the standard teaching books for legal evidence, evidentiary proof, in the United States up through the 1950s. He was the man that probably more than anyone else in America put Harvard Law School on the map. Simon Greenlee continued to be an agnostic, perhaps atheist. He didn't think much about religion, and he certainly had no time for Christ, because he thought that if religion was fine, that Christianity was certainly the least of them. And one day in class, he made an offhanded comment about the stupidity of believing in the resurrection. Three of his students challenged him. They said, Professor Greenlee, if what you say is true, then why not prove it? Prove to us that the resurrection is phony. Simon Greenlee thought that was a wonderful idea. He had been exposed to the faith of his parents. He'd grown up in it. He despised it, had rejected it, and he thought it would be the ultimate goal in his life to prove that the resurrection was a hoax, and that way he could discount all that his parents had attempted to teach him. And so he set out to disprove the resurrection. He studied the ancient documents. He studied the evidence that was before us. He studied the testimony of the eyewitnesses in the Gospels. He studied the Gospels themselves. Could they be believed? He reached the absolute conclusion that the Gospels were not only the most reliable historical document ever penned, but they were so to such a magnitude over anything else that existed that only a fool would discount what they said. He then tried to take apart the eyewitness accounts. He studied them for a long time, and he finally reached this conclusion that there was not a single eyewitness to the resurrection that claimed that Jesus Christ rose from the dead that didn't, instead of receiving reward for it, end up suffering greatly for that claim. Now, I'm going to be real honest here. How many of you have ever lied? Show of hands. You have ever lied in your life. Why did you lie? Because ultimately, there's only two reasons why you lie. The first reason is to get out of trouble. That starts real easy. Who ate those cookies? Not me. You know, the problem with eating cookies out of the cookie jar, my mom always had glass cookie jars. Remember the glass cookie jars? Now, you can eat one cookie out of the cookie jar, rearrange the cookies, and no one on earth will ever know. But you know what? If there's 50 cookies in that cookie jar and you eat 46 of them, there is no way under the sun to make those four cookies. I mean, I tried standing them up. I tried putting them along the edge, you know. There is no way under the sun to make four cookies look like a full cookie. And in spite of that, who ate those cookies? Not me. You're the only person in the house, except your baby brother that can't walk. It's a miracle, Mom. You lie to get out of pain. Avoid a painful or uncomfortable situation. Any of you ever seen the commercial with Abe Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln sitting there, and she turns to him and goes, "Does this dress make me look fat?" Do you know what the right answer to that question is? No, it is not the dress that makes you look fat. Oh, that's not the right answer. We lie to get out of painful. The second reason we lie, the only other reason we lie, is to get something we want. No one lies to get pain. No one. You don't lie to get in trouble. You lie to get out of trouble. You don't lie to lose something good. Can you imagine the kid? The mom says, "If you clean your room, we'll go out and get ice cream." Wow! Kid runs upstairs, cleans the entire room. When they get done, runs downstairs. Mom says, "Did you finish your room?" "No." That never happens, does it? There's a lot of times that the kid runs upstairs, bangs around a lot, comes downstairs. "Did you clean your room?" "Yes." But it never goes the other way, does it? How many politicians you ever hear lie about some scandal in their life? You ever heard a politician lie about a scandal that didn't happen? "Yes, I did it." It doesn't happen, does it? Now, Now, here's the difference that Simon Greenleaf found between the apostles and every other believer in religion. How many people in the history of the world have died for their religion? And the answer is, we have no concept, but it's a lot. Hundreds of millions. But every single martyr in the history of the world died for what they believed was the truth. Those tens and hundreds of thousands of Nazi soldiers who died for Adolf Hitler believed he was the instigator of the Third Reich. The apostles were in an entirely different place. They didn't claim to believe the gospel. They claimed to witness it. Look with me at the words that John writes in 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1. John chapter 1 verse 1. Here's what John says about his testimony. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at, studied. Ever gone to a magic show? Ever gone to a magic show? I saw that plane disappear. I saw that woman cut in two. Now, John says it wasn't just that we saw it. We were right there and looked at it. We were out in the middle of that storm when he came walking on the water. And guess what? There ain't any stones in the Sea of Galilee tall enough to walk across. We saw it. We looked at it. And he says, our hands have touched it. Ever see something you didn't believe, so you had to touch it to be sure? John said this wasn't a ghost. Do you remember the apostles? He's a ghost. Come here, touch me. This is real. Simon Greenleaf said when he actually looked at the evidence, instead of simply ignoring it, he said, I was driven to the place where I had to admit that the apostles were the best of testimony that you could possibly have. They had no inducement to lie and every inducement to tell the truth. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, there was no reason for them to suffer as they did. I challenge you. Don't take my word for it. Do the research. You say, that was a long time ago. Simon Greenleaf died in 1853, 160 years ago. Well, that was an uneducated time. Read some of their literature before you say that. But let me go a little further, because 20-odd years ago, there was another man just like Simon Greenleaf. His name was Lee. He was a newspaper editor, one of those jaded media people. Like most of them, he was an avowed liberal. He didn't believe any of that garbage about the founding fathers or about America, and he certainly didn't believe the Christianity that it was built on. And then he had the most horrible thing in his life possibly happen. His wife became a Christian. And all he was mad. And the testimony for both her and him is that he made her life miserable. But he noticed something. Her life got better. And he hated her for that too. And then he said, here's what he said. She convinced him to go to church. And when he was there, one of the pastors said this to him, because they knew that he was a virtual atheist, at least an agnostic. They said, well, why don't you take all your newspaper reporting skills and show that the gospel's a fake, and that way you can prove it to your wife and she'll give up her Christianity. And he thought that was a wonderful. He's written a dozen books now about the truth of Christianity. The resurrection is not a fairy tale. It's not a myth. It's not one of those religious things that religious people believe. It is a fact. In fact, there is more proof for the resurrection than there is proof that George Washington was president of the United States. But so, even if it's true, well, let's say for a moment the resurrection's true. So what? That was 2,000 years ago. Who cares? True things from 2,000 years ago that I don't give a flying rip about. How about you? We can probably prove that Caesar lived, although there is less proof for the existence of Caesar than there is proof for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's not a faith statement. That's not a Christian statement. That is a historical statement. So what? So what if some guy lived and died and rose again 2,000 years ago? So what? Well, let me tell you, so what? It wouldn't mean a thing except that that man said this. Here's what he said. He said, John chapter 14, verse 6. John chapter 14, verse 6. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one. That's you. That's you. And that's me. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's no other way. If Jesus rose from the dead. Now, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, you know what you can do with that statement and all the other ones in this book? You can throw them all into a big pile, throw them all into a heap, dump a can of gasoline on them, set it on fire and burn it up, and the world would be a better place. Because it's all a pack of lies. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead. But if the resurrection is true, and it is, then that statement carries weight. There's a lot of people that say, I'm the way. There are a lot of them. You want to visit some? Just go to any corner. Places full of them. Just talk to some of these politicians. The world is full of them. People that think they know the way. People that think they can tell you the way. People that think they've got the truth. But here's the difference. Every single one of them either have been already or will be dead, buried, and that'll be the last chapter in their book on this earth. When you close the box, hope is gone. You may try to live out the teachings of that person, but their part is done. How many David Koreshites are there left on earth today? How many people running around for Jim Jones? You see, when you're dead, you're dead. At least as far as this life goes. And there are a lot of people that think they've got it all figured out, but they don't come back to tell you whether it worked or not. You know what made Columbus so different? It wasn't that he got to America. There are a number of historians now that think that a bunch of people got to America. It's that he got back. The fact that Jesus died isn't some great thing. Everybody does that. The fact that he came back. Now, when the one who comes back says, I am the way. Guess what? That doesn't lose relevance because it was 2,000 years ago. Because nobody's matched it since. Oh, there's all kinds of people telling you how to live. They're psychiatrists. For $200 an hour, they'll tell you how to live. They ain't coming back. There's political leaders. There's celebrities. I started something several months ago. Someone challenged me. I was watching a special that was, they interviewed a bunch of bodyguards and fixers for the stars. These are the people that when the stars get in trouble, they swoop in there and they get, you know, they pay bribes and they do all that stuff to get them out of trouble. And they made this statement. They said, if you really knew what the stars are like, you wouldn't want to watch their movies, much less be in the same room with them. Since that time, I've been, whenever I watch a show, I start just Googling the different stars. And you know, it gets pretty depressing. 6, 8, 10 marriages. DWIs. Drug use. Charges. People listen to them and they say, I've got the way. Yeah, Justin Bieber. Lindsay Lohan. You know, it's Legion. Jesus is different because you see, Jesus died and rose again. That resurrection is fact, and therefore it's relevant because nobody else has done it. Now, if there was somebody, people say, well, that was old times. They didn't do much. Okay, you just die and come back to life. Go ahead. When you've done that, then I'll listen to you the way I listen to Jesus Christ. Until then, you better think about what you're doing. You see, The gospel's absolutely clear. Turn with me back to 1 Corinthians. We were in 1 Corinthians, but just let me show you one thing in there. The gospel's absolutely clear. Look with me at 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I stopped a little before this, but here it is. You know, people say, well, why do you get all upset about things? And why don't you just have fun? And why don't you just go out and live and enjoy your life? And because here's why. Jesus said that gets you nowhere. Why are you going to follow him? Because he rose from the dead. Here's what the Bible acknowledges. 1 Corinthians 15:19. If only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are to be pitied more than all men. Another translation says we are more miserable than all men. Paul's right. You don't become a Christian because you want to just get by in this life. There are people today that preach become a Christian and God will take care of all your... You ever seen that commercial where the guy's driving down the highway and there's like 8,000 cars in the line and the cars all move and he just goes right down the yellow line in the middle? There's people that preach that that's what God does for you when you become a Christian. They're liars. You become a Christian, you still have problems. Who here is hurting today financially? I know we are, more than we've probably ever heard in my life. Who here has physical sickness or pain or something that doesn't go away? I do. You don't become a Christian because God sweeps the road clean and you get to drive 90 miles an hour through this life without a problem. That doesn't happen, whether you believe or whether you don't. You become a Christian because the one who died and came back says there's only one way that you're going to survive what's coming. He says, I'm in. I've used this illustration, but I'll use it again. Here it goes. You're kidnapped on your way out of the building today. You're taken by a group of thugs, terrorists, whatever it is you think is bad, cartel members, whoever it is that's out there, and you're given this choice. For the next 7 days, you can have any pleasure you want. Nothing will be denied to you. Any pleasure, no matter how costly, how sinful, how abusive of others, anything you want for the next 7 days. But after that period of time, for the rest of your life, until the day you die, they will keep you alive for as long as it's possible for you to live. You will be tortured within an inch of your life, every hour of every day, until the day you die. Or, for the next 7 days, you'll have hardship. You'll have to give up things. You may even be tortured. But at the end of those 7 days, for the rest of your life, until the day you die, you will have nothing but joy and bliss. Till the end of, which would you choose? Which would you choose? But you see, eternity is so much more than the rest of your life compared to 7 days. To ignore Jesus Christ says, I'll live for the next 7 days, because that's all that any of us have left in times of eternity. I could boil it down and say, we've all got less than a second. You live to be 132 when you're 10 today. You've got less than a second compared to eternity. And if every single day of that life you enjoyed every blissful pleasure you think you want, no matter how sinful, no matter how wicked, no matter how expensive, no matter how selfish, compared to the eternity that's coming, it won't be worth it. And I don't care how hard your life is for the next 30 or 40 or 50 years or 60 or 70 or 80 years compared to the eternity that's coming. It's worth it. But only if Jesus rose from the dead. That why the Apostle Paul says, if it didn't happen, we're idiots. Read 1 Corinthians, or 2 Corinthians chapters 9, 10, 11. All he went through. Beaten, abused, rejected, injured, shipwrecked. I've got coming is worth so much more. That's not pie in the sky. That's not pretend. Because you see, I'm exactly like Simon Greenwood. Or Lee Strobel. I was born into a nominally Christian family. The most dangerous thing you can be born into. A person that claims to believe in Jesus but doesn't have any connection to him whatsoever. And I grew up thinking Christianity was the biggest stupidity in the world. I couldn't wait till my 16th birthday when I could go wild and live for all the pleasure this world had. Because then I'd have a car and I'd have freedom and nobody would be keeping track of me and man, I could get mine. God had other plans. When I was 15 and a half, he introduced me somebody that preached the gospel the right way and showed me that the gospel isn't just a nice thing to believe in, it's the truth. This book is real. I didn't want to believe it. Wasn't trying to believe it. Wasn't seeking to believe it. It doesn't matter. Because the truth is the truth no matter what I do with it. The resurrection is real. The resurrection is relevant. Let's talk about the last one. The response for the resurrection. Here is the most popular responses for the resurrection. The first one is to simply ignore it. Most people simply ignore it. They don't know whether it's true. It doesn't sound true because, you know, people don't come back from the dead. Nobody visits graveyards going, ooh, I wonder if somebody will rise today. Houdini can be buried with his hand reaching out all he wants. Still there. See, and a lot of people just ignore it. Who cares? Don't even think about it. I don't care whether it's true, whether it's not true. It probably isn't true because it just sounds far-fetched. That's foolish. But you know, a lot of people are pretty foolish, aren't they? How many people think only for the day? We're like drug addicts. Is there a single drug addict in the world that can think that what they're doing ends well? You know anybody that's ever been a drug addict that it ended well? Then why do people become drug addicts? Cigarettes, well, oh, I love cigarettes. Why on earth would anyone start? Have you ever heard somebody about 90 years old that smoked 2-pack a day go, boy, I'm glad I And you probably haven't, because most people that smoke 2-packs a day don't live to 90. My father and his twin brother, my father lived a much more moral life than his twin brother. But my father died 15 years earlier than my brother, than his brother, his twin brother, because he smoked. And my uncle did. But people just don't care. They don't listen. They ignore all the warning. Why? I don't know. That's what they do with the resurrection. Here's the second one. The second one is they just take the popular opinion. Well, you know, my professor at college says it's stupid, so he's a smart guy. He must be right. Most people think everything's opinion polls today. Well, 62 out of 100 people believe this. Got to be true. It was on a reality show. Reality and reality show don't live in the same universe, do they? know, we're that way about a lot of things, aren't we? How many people heard something somewhere and that's all they need to think they know what it is? Christianity is not, people say, well, you have to take a blind leap of faith. That is a lie. Study it all you want. Do the research. I dare you to disprove Christianity. There's a bunch of people out there that have rewards. If you can disprove the resurrection, you can make several thousand dollars. From people that set up a trust. Anybody that can do it will pay you this much money. They set up trusts about it. Got some bills you need to pay? Just disprove the resurrection. Guess what? All those smarty pants out there, how many college students need several thousand dollars? Wouldn't be a bad windfall. How come none of them are quite it? How come none of those brilliant professors with all their smart mouth answers about the resurrection have claimed that money? Because you can't do it. People ignore it. People simply don't think it through. Here's the third one. They okie-dokie. I think that's the most terrible of all the answers there is. They okie-dokie. Yep, I believe it's true. Yep, I believe Jesus rose from the dead. Yep, I went to church. I went to Sunday school. It's all fine. Here's what Jesus says to that person, Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3, here's what Jesus says to that person. That person that says, yeah, it's all true, but yeah, good for you. Here's what it says, Revelation 3:16. We'll start at 15. I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither cold nor hot, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. You see, if the resurrection is true, you can't say, yep, it's true. Gosh, I ought to do something about it. Wow, that, you know. If it's true, then it is the most important event in human history. If tomorrow it came across the news that some guy had invented a way to overcome death, a pill you could take that would bring you back from the dead and restore you to youth and vigor, what would people do to get that pill? Do you think anyone in the world would greet that news with, who cares? That's exactly what Jesus did. You cannot greet it with lukewarmness. Now here's the right answer. If you're willing to go beyond ignoring it, if you're willing to go beyond not willing, being willing to check it out, if you're willing to go beyond a half-hearted acceptance of it, then here's the right answer. It's found in John chapter 20. John chapter 20. Here it is, John chapter 20. Here's a guy that wasn't a believer in Jesus Christ after the crucifixion. He had lost all his faith. He'd been a believer. He followed Jesus around. He'd sacrificed for Jesus, but when Jesus died, he said, like most of us should have said, that's the end, because when they put you in the box, it's over. John chapter 20, verse 24. Now Thomas, called Didymus, a twin, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. There are those who try to claim that the disciples were just rabid believers who were willing to grasp at any straw. We see here honest men who thought that Jesus had been the way. When he died, they said, oops, we were wrong. Just like they should have. Because it's this blind leap of faith is not true faith. And they weren't willing to listen to half-hearted testimony. 26, a week later, his disciples were in the house again. Thomas was with them, and though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger right here. See my hand. Reach out your hand. Shove it into the hole in my side. Stop doubting and believe. What did Thomas say? Well, I think this is good. I'm going home. I'm glad it worked out for you. See you next Easter. Thomas did what you and I must do in light of the reality and the relevance of the resurrection. He said two claims. He said, my Lord. That first means that from that point on, Jesus was in charge of his life. There are not very many people today that have Jesus as their Lord. I don't know how many people I talk to that say, well, I think. The moment you say, well, I think, who are you saying is in charge? Me. I believe. Who's in charge? I want. I feel. I don't like. Who's in charge? If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, you have every right to do that. But if Jesus rose from the dead, then you have to stop saying, wait, I'm the one in charge, and it's time to make Jesus Lord. If anyone will confess with their mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in his heart God raised him from the dead, he will be saved. He doesn't stop there. He says, my Lord and my God. What's a God? Well, to define a God, we must define its counterfeit first. Its counterfeit is called an idol. What's an idol? An idol is something you love, worship, or give your life to above everything else. It's something that you bow down to, not just an act. But your heart says, this is what matters to me. Thomas said, my God. My God. 30 years later, Thomas found himself half a continent away in the land of India, what was then called the Parthian Empire. Thomas found himself in that Parthian Empire convicted of preaching that Jesus that he said, my Lord and my God. They took him, they put a short chain around his right arm. They took that chain and they put it to a post driven into the ground. They handed him a shield and they used him for human spear practice to train their horsemen in how to spear foot. That's how he died. For his Lord. And his God. All he would have had to say is, I renounce that Jesus junk. They would have cut him loose. Let me ask you, who is your Lord today? Now, most of us don't have some idol at home. Our idol puts on our pants, or our shirt, or our blouse, or our skirt every morning. Our idol looks us in the mirror. We brush our idol's teeth. We take our idol into the shower and wash it up so it smells nice. For most of us, my Lord, I'm going to do what I want. Well, don't I have the right? God? What do I love? I just want to be happy. What do I love? My happiness. Well, what about that person that I have to kick in the teeth to get it? Oh, well. Well, I have a right to do what I think is best. Only response to the resurrection is this: my Lord and my God. There is no other response. Now here's the question. What's your response? Are you one of those that are going to okey-dokey it? Yeah, I'm a Christian. Don't get on me about living for Jesus or any of that stuff. Don't go overboard. I had somebody talk to me about someone that said, well, I never go to a little church because they want too much out of me. I don't know. Could they want more than Jesus wants? I don't know of a single church that asks more than Jesus asks. They may ask differently than he asks. So that's a problem. But nobody asks more than Jesus asked. Because Jesus says, if anybody comes after me, they must deny themselves and take up that cross and follow me. Okie dokie, I believe in Jesus. I'm a Christian. Yeah. Where do I sign up? Let me pray that prayer. Let me walk that aisle. Here I am. Now I'm saved. I'll see you in 40 years when I go to heaven. Maybe you're one that just says, well, I just don't want to think about that. You know how many people don't think about retirement? Most of them, it doesn't end well. You know how many people don't think about their health? I do that way too much. Doctor says, you got to get that passed. Yeah. Only 5 years late. That usually doesn't end up too well, though. I just don't want to think about what happens after I die. Do you honestly think that's going to end out well? Oh God, here we are this morning, on this Easter morning. We have some thinking to do, because the resurrection confronts us. It is reality. It is not a hoax. It's not a fake. It's not a faith statement. It's not, everybody's got their own religion. It is a fact. And whether we believe it, don't believe it, whether we laugh at it, whether we sneer at it, whether we try to disprove it, its factliness remains. It's relevant. Because if Jesus really rose from the dead, and he did, then everything's changed. There's somebody that actually knows what happens after you die. Not when you're near dead, not when you're sort of dead, when you're dead. And he says there's only one way. We don't have anyone else to ask. So what are we going to do with Jesus? Pilate asked that question 2,000 years ago this weekend. He said, what am I to do with Jesus who is called the Christ? And the crowd said, crucify. Since that day, many have said, ignore him. A lot have said ridicule him. A bunch have said, I don't know what to do with him, I just don't want to think about it. But anyone who's not a fool has said like Thomas, my Lord and my God. What choice will we make, Lord? Convict our hearts, because it is only by the Holy Spirit that any of us will make the